You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
And welcome back, everybody. This is episode 15 of the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast. I am Mike.
And I am Ruhi.
And we have a really interesting conversation today because we're going to talk a little bit more about some topics we brought up in episode 14 around the exercise within self-regulation. Specifically, we were going to start with you talking a little bit more about your jump into the martial arts and the training you went through, and you mentioned off air a few of the struggles that you started to notice. Do you want to maybe start with there, just to remind people again what that martial arts training was and how that kind of began?
Yeah, it. I was in. I started practicing karate, specifically. Goju-ryu karate, and the training initially was in the beginning it's about an hour until you move to higher belts, and then it becomes about a it's 2 hours of training per session, and it's pretty hardcore. Mm-hmm. Physically and then also mentally.
Yeah.
Because you are training specific katas, which are very specific combat movements. And each kata, you do it to almost a perfection. And then you move to another one. And then you move to more and more complex complex katas. And so once I started that, I was at that. And this particular time... I'm moving, this is 2013 now, mm-hmm. beginning of 2013, where I've also requested slightly more rhythmic schedule, because prior to that, and we'll post this on our website, we'll mm-hmm. post the schedules on our website so people have an idea of what those schedules look like in 2011, 2012, and 2013. So 2012, it was still fairly arrhythmic. 2013, I'd requested for more rhythmic schedule because I realized that it was really important to have some sort of rhythmicity in my life and also to be able to plan things, because if you're all over the place, it's very difficult to plan anything, let alone physical activity and training. So at that point, I was on three nights, and then I would train at night, usually for anywhere approximately for 45 minutes high intensity training, warm up, high intensity training, cool down process. That was about 45 minutes. And then off nights, when I was not working, I was scheduled for a couple of 2 to 3 sessions of martial arts training, which usually lasted for a couple of hours.
Wow.
And prior to going, I would actually go in half an hour early just to do warm-up, yoga sort of thing, do 2 hours of training, and I would be the last person to normally leave. I would do another half an hour of cool-down and stretching prior to my 2 hours. So it's about 3 hours of total training. And at one point, I did throw in jujitsu in there as for a little bit.
Okay.
But
because it wasn't enough, I guess.
That wasn't enough. You know, you start moving, you're
I
want to do this,
I want to do that. Of course.
That was interesting, but it wasn't my cup of tea, to tell you the truth. I thought it was great, but I'm always worried about injury. It's kind of instilled, as I discussed in our previous episode, by my mother to be very mindful.
Yes, you mentioned that,
of form. And so this is happening, and this is fairly intense. We're going at it. This is 2013. And then I started to feel, I was beginning to get, because there was little recovery time in between training at night and then doing full-on training on days off. So it's high intensity all round, sometimes 5 to 6 days. And sometimes off-day trainings would last 2 to 3 hours per day. So per session. And so I started to feel I was beginning to feel injuries. Like at certain points, I would feel really stiff, and then I would push myself. And I thought, okay, just pushing myself further would help, because also another process of this was that I didn't want to stop.
Right.
Because right. I was yeah. feeling so good.
Yeah, you mentioned
about
that.
Everything yeah. and that level of control.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought because I didn't have control over other situations in terms of my sleep, in terms mm-hmm. of my schedule, all of that, having this kind of control gave, I felt I had control over everything else.
Right.
So there is that psychological component that one mustn't forget either. But having that psychological component to it, you also forget, or I didn't pay attention to the physical component of it either, where I realized that actually it was becoming a little difficult,
right.
harder right. in terms of training as well.
And was that gradual that, as well? Like slowly
that was gradual.
You
that
to
was
see that?
Okay. I was slowly starting to see that, and I was like, "Oh, it's just because I'm training
yeah.
hard. I'm not right. stretching enough.
Right.
That's what it is. Like yeah, you're yeah. not stretching enough, and this is what's happening." But then I did get injured where. It was on my hip flexors, actually, that ended up leading to a back injury.
Oh, wow.
That then I couldn't, one day, actually, I couldn't move. Ooh. That's what ended up happening.
Yeah,
that
with
I
backs.
Was, yeah, I couldn't move, and I was terrified. I was terrified because I was like, oh, if my first thing was, oh my gosh, I can't play with my son.
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
the first thought.
Well, of
it
course,
wasn't more
yeah.
like my thing. And yeah. then, and then after my recovery and after physiotherapy, which was also a long process in terms of physiotherapy, it was my physiotherapist that recommended me going into functional movement training to retrain my body, have my movements basically assessed.
Right.
So that's when I started functional movement training in conjunction with martial arts training.
Wow.
As well.
As well. Still doing that. Still doing
and
martial
still
arts.
Doing,
yeah.
And still doing training at
and,
night.
And is the training like very one-on-one? So,
oh,
so
it was
can,
very
the trainer
yes.
can kind of learn what
it
was going on with
yeah,
you? Okay.
Definitely. It yeah. was one-on-one and it was long.
Okay.
And so...
So how many hours does that add on? Like how long
that
is
was,
that?
That was my functional movement training with my coach, who I still have, by the way.
Oh,
I have the
okay.
same coach
great.
Now as well. That I, yeah, it's amazing. He's amazing. It was an hour long.
An hour long, okay.
Yeah, an hour long session with him, sometimes twice a week. Sometimes once a week, depending on where my martial arts training was as well.
Sure, sure.
He basically assessed my various movements and realized where I was weak and then built the systems around it.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense why it would fluctuate because mm-hmm. some weeks your training might be at a place where 1 hour is fine, but sometimes mm-hmm. maybe you need that additional thing. And is that something that you just – you really had to just play it by as
definitely.
It
definitely, it was. It was more like then I started balancing between, okay, I will do maybe a couple of days of martial
yeah.
arts and a couple of days of functional
sure.
Or a day of functional movement and then take the functional movement component of my training and put that
and
into
put into
my
practice.
Nights.
Yeah, of course.
Practice
yeah.
at night.
Yeah.
And instead of like just doing high intensity, high intensity, high intensity, I started to shift things and focused more on the functional movement component
yeah.
in conjunction with high intensity, but for shorter lengths of time.
And what did you find that did for you? Like as you got you were starting to probably learn a little bit more about your body and the movements that you're doing. What did that do for you, that exercise and for your martial arts training?
It made me more aware of mm-hmm. my of my physical self. It made me more aware of my form. And actually that's what I got out of it was being aware of where you are in terms of your physical form, how you stand, which martial arts actually is really good at that.
Yeah.
How you stand, where your stance is at in terms of like strength, how your core should be. And I think functional movement training added to that. That was really awesome. And that's something that built up my neural circuits to the point right now, if I am standing somewhere, like a set of lights or something, I immediately pay attention to my stance, where my stance is at, and where my core is at, where my physical self is at. And that kind of awareness of the body is incredible.
Yeah, that sounds incredible.
Like even when we're sitting here, you know, every once in a while, I will shift my shoulders back because I know I'm moving forward, slumping
a little bit.
Right,
of course, yeah.
Moving forward and, you know, making sure my core is tight. And that kind of awareness is then built in. That comes in and you're just aware of how you're going to be and how you're going to be, where your stance is at, where your body is at, where the space that you're inhabiting. Because this is what we are.
Yeah.
This is our form. This is what we're living in. And it's really important for me to move a certain way within the space that we inhabit.
Well, and talk to us a little bit about that aspect of essentially having a trainers or coaches or or, you know, working with people within martial arts where you're getting instruction and you're learning from that standpoint. Quite again, the shift from where you started, where yes, you had some of this training background, but you were basically doing what you could on your own within your shift work, climbing a lot of stairs, as we know, but now you've got trainers, coaches, guides almost within that. Talk a little bit about that and what that did for you.
So I think you come when as an athlete, which is what I had become at that particular point, you can't do this on your own.
Right.
You require, and if you're moving at that level in terms of movements, you require an infrastructure around it. And as I said, I started the high intensity training on my own. I moved into karate for two reasons. One was that somebody else was observing where I was in terms of physical, that I wasn't the only one. It was more objective. And, you know, because up until that point, it was subjective measurements. Now it was an objective measurement. And then and because now you're moving in a different way and you're realizing, and it's still high, it's because you're doing high intensity all the time and you don't have the knowledge, which I didn't at that particular point because I was just so into this, is the recovery process and to be able to have form in a very, very particular way, which only can happen when you're one-on-one with somebody who's actually observing everything you're doing and how you're moving and able to correct it.
Right.
Right. Because if you are moving a certain way, let's say you are doing a squat a certain way.
Sure.
Then that's the pattern you're going to be developing.
Yeah.
Right? And you're going to go back to that over and over again. And it could be the wrong form, which would eventually lead to injury. If you're not stable in terms of your movement, it's going to lead to injury, period.
Yeah.
So having a coach for me was extremely beneficial because I was doing these very high-intensity movements, and I needed to make sure that my form was aligned, that my form was correct, and somebody was actually observing. And to break that pattern is really important.
Yeah.
If you are on a wrong pattern, then to break that and only somebody who's aware, who can see you doing that and saying, okay, this is where you are shifting your weight. This is where your weight needs to be. This is where you're shifting. This is how we need to do it, and correct that over and over again until you come to that understanding. Because now when I do squats, sometimes, this is just an example.
Sure.
Doing squat, I'm always doing, I am making sure I take like short videos of me just to watch my form.
Right.
Because sometimes I watch, the front of my toes is up, like my feet are not fully grounded, that the toe raises or the knee goes in a little bit. And you go, oh, okay, that's not the right movement. I need to move my knees out. But if you didn't know about that, if you were not aware of that or made aware of that, or you did not know that that was actually wrong form, that's going to end up leading to injury.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, well, it would. And like you're saying, it becomes the pattern that you do. It gets ingrained in you and you're doing it incorrectly. And then, you know, it's harder probably to break for someone once they've been doing it over
and
over again.
And there you go. Injured. And then you're not like, if you can't recover from that, there goes your entirety of your training exactly. out the window.
Yeah, exactly. And again, for someone in your position, you talked about how stepping back was hard because you were enjoying it so much. Mm-hmm. Injuries would add to that. It would be difficult to
sure.
come back to.
Yeah. It's very scary to be injured. And then you see, I see some of my, when I notice these conversations I have with some of my elderly patients who have been moving most of their lives, have been active participants in their physical being, and then you know when we have these conversations about physical form and physical movement, and they go, you know, it's very hard. I wish I'd paid attention to my particular form at that particular point, because injuries come back.
Yeah, of course.
And that these injuries are now coming back, and they're not able to move.
Yeah.
And they feel that kind of dissonance.
Yeah.
From where they were and where they are. That's a hard thing to be able to.
Absolutely, especially come to terms with. You know, in general, it's always hard, but especially like in the way you're talking about, you're clearly passionate and interested in just doing it for the pleasure of it, the enjoyment, the fun that comes along.
The play.
The play that comes along with all of this exercise, which again is an interesting process that we always seem to forget about, is like there can be that enjoyment within it. And you clearly grabbed a lot of enjoyment just by doing and participating in these things. So injuries, setting it back, that can also do a lot for your mental strain.
Indeed.
Of, oh, I can't do this thing I love.
Yeah. And I think there's like a serious component to training, right?
Of course,
Like, there is like serious component. There is a serious component to it. And then there is playful
and
component
when, like,
to that.
When do you think is the time to get into the serious component, and when is the time to get into the play component?
I think that came later too, because I think I was always interested in the play aspect because coming from dancing and just running about, which I really liked, and moving, and when I had after my son was born, and then my niece arrived to live with us at the age of 3, I wanted them to be able to move in the world with playfulness.
Yeah.
And actually that they introduced me, they reintroduced the idea of play.
Of course. Yeah.
And then I built on this idea where I would take the neighborhood children and teach them. So it was really good to group them together and to teach them how to move, but in a very playful way, but teaching them the form, teaching them how to have fun while exercising and not just go to the playground and run around, which I also did,
of course,
by the way.
Yeah.
But also teaching them that there's a play and exercise and fun, all of this like go hand in hand. Like you can make it an everyday aspect of your existence, which is so much fun.
Yeah, and why do you think it's important that we do that?
It's important for me personally, because I think play is the non-serious component. It's the freedom aspect of movement, to be able to move. It's not bound by any set laws or rules, which I think sports, sports is serious.
Of course,
right?
And there's rules.
There are rules and there are regulations.
Pretty
and there's
a strong structure for
there's
a lot
a very,
of them. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. But when you are in this play, it's almost magic in terms of being able to move. But again, you need to be able to have those skills to be able to move a certain way. And when you've collected those particular skills, then the freedom that comes with it, the freedom that I can just go and do tree planks or do pull-ups outside.
Yeah.
And to be able to run when I want to, there's a freedom to that that you can you inhabit within your physical self and your physical
And I really like how you described getting all these young kids together, and you're sort of showing them within play, here's a little bit of movement and body things. But you said that they also taught you how to play. You were also rediscovering play for yourself. It's a give and take. It's not just instruction. It's you're learning something and taking
something
back.
I'm always learning from them. They are fantastic teachers.
Yeah.
Oh, children, adolescents. Amazing.
Yeah.
In terms of also like structuring, right? The when I would initially start to teach them how to run, for example, I would have them pick an activity, what they wanted to do, whether they wanted to do leapfrogs, whether they wanted to lunges for a block, and then do a little bit of chasing for a block, and then walk quietly or walk backwards, like anything that was fun, but it was also teaching them forms. And then I would take them, you know, to our lakefront here, because we have a whole collection of those amazing rocks, to teach them how to move from rock to rock. But also, what was very interesting about this is introducing them to the landscape that they were moving in, making them aware of the surroundings that they were in, and making them familiar just with the surrounding of it, getting comfortable with the surroundings, and then getting comfortable with their movements, because initially the movements were very, very slow. You know, if they were to jump from a rock, it would be very subtle in terms of sometimes they would just climb or you know, a very slow progression. And it was the progression that was very interesting to me. And actually, at one point, I got injured showing them how not to do something. And I remember that too, because I was off to a conference and my leg was injured. And people were like, what would happen? I was like, oh, I got injured showing exactly what one shouldn't do.
What should not
and
do.
It was very clear to them, actually, that one shouldn't do this.
Should not do this.
Should not
hurt.
Do this. Yeah. But it was amazing to see their progression of being so fearful about jumping from one position to another. Mm-hmm. And then once they became confident and once they became skillful, to see them move in those particular and very interesting landscapes. Yeah. Beautiful. For me, too.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you talk about play and their progression and seeing that go from, I'm a little hesitant, but then eventually getting very comfortable to it and matching that, we don't lose that, because that's at a young age they're doing that. But then as you set a similar process to things you became comfortable with when you're now training and you're taking it maybe a little more seriously. Mm-hmm. You're still remembering those aspects. Yeah. And I think sometimes we lose play. You know, as you get older, we just lose it.
We do,
you know,
don't we?
Yeah, we go for a run, but we don't do anything silly. We just go for a run. Like, there's no – the play is gone for that. But as kids, they're running too, but they're doing something like you're talking about, like leapfrog or backwards for a block. It's fun. It's exciting. It adds that element – of fun
and imagination.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is really awesome. And it's interesting that we talk about this, because when I am out now and I am exercising sometimes at night, I incorporate that play all the time.
Yeah.
And I incorporate that imagination all the time. Yeah. And if like a snow-covered field is for me a landscape that's not been chartered.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
And how I move about it. And I think we talked off record about it, I think this photograph that we're going to post and a write-up we're going to do on is how the other night when there was a blanket of snow on Nixon Field and I went out to train around 2 o'clock in the morning, how I moved in it using the movements of martial arts, those circular foot movements, and creating those incredible patterns in the snow itself and creating this artwork, which blew away the next day.
But having those
movements moving back and forth and having the snow. Yeah. And there was imagination to this, and there was play to that while you're exercising. And there's beauty and there's, you know.
And why not add a little play and excitement and fun and imagination into your exercise? I mean, does it not bring a little more enjoyment and excitement when you're doing that? I mean, you took a picture, so clearly you wanted to save the moment, and it says something to you.
Oh, yeah,
it
speaks to me. And also, I think it's an important thing to remind ourselves too, because I think when we think of exercise, or when we think about that, we work out. Like, workout is then another chore that we're adding on to our already incredibly busy existences where we should be moving. We're like, really?
No,
like, we're like, sitting down for 7 to 8 hours a day where our bodies are not made to do that.
Yeah.
Our bodies are made to be able to move at all times. And then we add this another component rather than. So I have to change my perceptions around that from the very beginning. For me, it was fun. It became play.
Yeah.
The landscape itself whether it was stairs or the elevators that I used to train or little areas that I used to train, they became playgrounds. And yeah. They still are playgrounds for me.
Yeah. No, I think you make a great point. And even for me, it's something I can relate to. I get way more enjoyment playing a game of squash mm-hmm. with a friend as opposed to running on a treadmill for a half an hour. Probably the same amount of exercise being done, but one feels like a chore and the other one feels fun. Has that element of play. And I think you bring up a really good point that a lot of people can really like grab onto and say, yes, that makes sense. But again, sometimes I would, until you put a name to it, I never would have made that connection because you're in it, right? You're in it and you're mm-hmm. trying to work through it. And you don't always have that chance to step back and look at it. And
yeah,
it's a very interesting perception. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode again. Thank you so much for diving into this. I really, again, I think I said this last episode, but it's the same here. I think you've given us a real good deep insight. And this topic has gone somewhere where I think a lot of people can reflect back upon.
Yeah, let's all go out, move and play.
Move and play. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, available on ruhisleep.ca. You can also get more information and find us on social media at Ruhi Sleep on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Thank you for listening.